The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is sponsored by Klaviyo. If you're working around the clock to build your e-commerce business, you need an e-commerce specific marketing platform that works just as hard as you do. That means you need Klaviyo. With Klaviyo, you'll delight customers and drive revenue at the same time with personalized email and SMS marketing campaigns that you can design and send in minutes without an IT degree. It's by far the most popular email marketing tool in our private community of 7- and 8-figure e-commerce store owners because it's got incredibly advanced and powerful segmentation features that help you make more money. To get started for free and to learn more, check them out at klaviyo.com/ECF. That's klaviyo.com/ECF. The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by One Click Upsell by Zipify Apps. You probably know there's three ways to make more money from your store. You can get more traffic, you can increase the size of the orders you get, or you can increase the number of people that convert on your site. You're probably spending time on traffic, almost certainly. You may have spent time with conversion rate optimization, but when's the last time, honestly, you tried to increase that cart size? Well, one-click upsell makes it incredibly easy to offer powerful targeted upsells to your customers. They've generated over $150 million in additional revenue for store owners, just like you. And over 16% of people who get offered an upsell actually take you up on it. It's really powerful. Their entire system is built into Shopify's native checkout, so it's rock solid and secure. And it's built by Ezra Firestone and his team. Ezra, you may know, good friend of mine. He's been in the e-commerce game for a long time. He uses this on his own 8-figure stores. He's in the trenches and he knows it works. So if you want to actually start working on a third of your business that you've been neglecting, increasing that cart size, check him out today at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Hey guys, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping 7-figure-plus e-commerce brands build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And every now and then, you come across someone who just strikes you as a smart, savvy hustler in the best possible sense. They get stuff done quickly. They have a knack for knowing what's going to resonate well. They work hard. They work their way up the learning curve quickly. And that's the impression I got when I was introduced to Connor Lewis from GetTheFort.com. Connor had brought to market in a very short time period, I think 9 or 10 months, a idea for this magnetic fort. And we get into it a little bit, but at a high level, if you've got kids, almost certainly, they've created forts, which is what we call them, a brilliant name for this. It's just I don't know why nobody has come up with this before, but forts in your living room, in their bedroom with pillows and chairs and all sorts of stuff. Well, he made one that, as opposed to having to completely tear apart all of your bedding and furniture in your house, is kind of a magnetic fort with big soft cushions kids can play with. And in the course of about 10 months, he designed it, brought it to market, prototyped it, tested it, launched it on Kickstarter and raised about $3 million. And also, was able to build up, and this was actually the springboard for allowed him to do that, email list of about 80,000, more than 80,000 people, and a pretty thriving Facebook community, private community that helped him launch it. So pretty cool story and such a rapid pace of just working innovation and getting stuff done. So we dive into all of this. We talk about how he's able to pull it off. We talk about what he's learned about Facebook groups. We talk about some of his pretty cool ways of testing out and prototyping and validating the product idea early on. It's just a really interesting discussion. And more than anything, I think it's impressive and a good reminder of what you can get done in a short period of time if you have a good reason to and if you're hustling hard. So anyway, hope you enjoy the discussion. I had a lot of fun with Connor and we'll dive right into it. Connor, welcome to the show, sir. I'm excited to dive into all the nitty-gritty, all of the tactical stuff, the story, all the things that are going to make true e-commerce geeks just kind of salivate in terms of how you've built this up in less than 9 months, which is crazy. But the thing I have to lead with, and the thing that I think is maybe one of the most impressive things you have done, is the way that you shot your Kickstarter video and what you spoke about and what you didn't. Because all sorts of copywriting gurus and people, and it's kind of a cliche at this point to say sell, there's what you sell and then there's what you're actually selling, right? Like, you can sell a back scratcher, but you're actually selling, comfort and pleasure and things like that. And you did that so well with the Kickstarter video. And for people, I'll link up to it in the show notes, but for people who haven't seen it, it's, you know, as I mentioned at the top, you sell this, you know, a magnetic fort for kids. And you, I mean, there was a couple shots of it in there. Let's say the 3-minute Kickstarter video, 2 minutes and 30 seconds of it was talking about, or at least framing, like how relaxed you were and like sipping a nice cup of coffee, reading the New Yorker on your couch, like without any kids screaming at you. And you know, and just the peace it gave you. And maybe 30 seconds was about your product, which I thought was just brilliant. Anyway, can you talk about, like, was that something you deeply thought about? Was that just a happy coincidence that happened to work out well? I'd love to hear more about that, because you captured that in a way I think few people can in terms of marketing and where people get caught up on the product versus the benefits.
Yeah, I was really inspired by a very specific campaign, and I've heard reference him a lot, Colin McIntosh, CEO of a company called Sheets and Giggles. I basically took most of my kind of pre-launch strategy from him. He's got a really cheeky brand. Obviously, it's called Sheets and Giggles, an allusion to, you know, the saying. So I was really inspired by that. And I was like, you know, I think the big value prop here for a lot of parents is that my kids are going to leave me alone, finally, maybe, you know, just maybe. And so, you know, I opened the video and I'm like, you know, it is literally me sitting on a couch drinking a cup of coffee. And most people, in fact, Kickstarter, the company, was like, hey, you should probably put your product like as the first image. And I was like, I'm sticking with this. And, you know, I'm sitting here and I say, you know, I start it and I say, you may ask Connor, what are you doing? Are you supposed to be selling the people on the Fort Kickstarter? And I go on to say, well, actually I am, because my kids are leaving me alone. In fact, all the cushions are on my couch. And yeah, that was a pretty bold move, but I think that mixed with the UGC, the user generated content, really kind of helped sell a lot of people on kind of the vibe we were going for, you know, the couch savior here, and the fact that it's just like this super fun modular thing for kids to get all their energy out.
No, it's brilliant. And I think for people, if you don't have kids, maybe it sounds a little brutal. We're like, hey, buy this product so you don't have your kids can leave you alone. But if you have kids, it's not that you don't love your kids, it's that if you, you know, kids just have an inability to not check in for more than about, you know, 30 seconds to 60 seconds at a time. And so getting that, you know, 20 minutes of just kind of parent solo time is really nice. And it's funny, I think I told you this too, Connor, but in our house, like, your video with you sitting on the couch was so poignant, because, like, you can tell I'm an entrepreneur here and kind of geeky, but we have a checklist, a laminated checklist of kid chores. And one of them every day is the before dinner, like, task, you know, chore for one of the kids. And it's like, one of the things is like, go in and put all of the, you know, all the stuff back on the couch that you ripped apart to build the fort. Anyway, so it was very, really resonated. But so I want to talk about you started this, you know, back in July, and some of the high, you know, the stats at this level, I think, correct me if I'm wrong here, but, you know, started this whole project in July with an idea before you had anything. And now you've launched a Kickstarter, raised over $3 million, 80,000 person plus email list, close to 10,000 people on an SMS list, a private Facebook group with 13,000 to 15,000 people. And all for a pretty reasonable ad spend. I think you maybe said 3,000, under 3,000 at one point, maybe a little bit higher than that. But is that a fair ballpark for where you've, you know, what you've been able to build in the last 9 months?
Yeah, that was about dead on. Yeah. So I think last I checked, from September 1st, which was about when we got our first prototype and started kind of putting some ads out and testing the market, to January 25th, which was the day before our Kickstarter launch, total ad spend was just under 3,000, something like 2,800. And yeah, the 80,000 email, you know, almost 10,000 SMS, you know, Instagram, you know, plus big Facebook private group and 2 million raised within the first 24 hours.
Yeah. Well, congrats on doing that. And I'm excited to kind of reverse engineer this, because it's a cool story. But to set the stage, like, you got into this, correct me if I'm wrong, but you have, due to COVID, your background is kind of in video and some digital. You lost a job, though, had a second child on the way. And there's a quote I was reading in one of your interviews that, you know, said, this company has to profit. We're not here to do the tech. Let's scale and make something for free, basically, because first and foremost, we need to pay for daycare out of the gate. So, like, you had a pretty intense kind of kickoff to this.
Yeah. You know, that is, as I reflect back, it is so true. I had this number in my mind, and my wife's an accountant. So, you know, she's a CPA. So she really knows what she needs money wise, which can be frustrating sometimes, but also helpful, because I'm a creative. And so that's not my strong suit. She's like, we need you know, so I lost my job April 2020. I was working for a private family office for a high net worth individual, basically kind of doing like entrepreneurial and residence type things. You know, he had me doing all sorts of weird projects, but I was kind of the low man on the ladder. You know, I'm one of the younger guys in a room full of mostly, you know, CPAs, lawyers, and things like that. And I'm doing video projects and marketing and kind of down and dirty, you know, community building and things like that. And so it was really easy to cut his losses at that point and no hard feelings there. But, you know, I'm looking around at my life and like, you know, I've got a little bit of severance, you know, but I've got a car payment and I've got a mortgage. And my wife is, you know, at that point, I guess like 6 months pregnant and I've got a 2-year-old. And I'm like, okay, so COVID hit. My 2-year-old is not in daycare. Now it's going to get really hard we actually can't send her back to daycare until I get another job because my wife makes plenty of money, but not that much. And so I was like, okay, I have about until my wife's maternity leave is up to really figure this out because I'm going to have 2 kids who need to go to daycare. And that is a serious bill. And my options were either make money on e-commerce, I get a job, which I really was not looking forward to, or I become stay-at-home dad, which, I mean, I love my kids, but, you know, that was not my favorite option.
Yeah. And so you had this idea, you know, for Magnetic, these kind of forts. I think it was an idea you brainstormed, you put it together. How did you kind of looked at it and I think it resonated with you and you thought, well, let's give this a shot. It seems like how long did it take you to get the product made? And then specifically, I thought the way that you tested the product was really interesting in terms of validating it, seeing if you actually had something on your hands. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So I approached it very similarly to how I would have when I used to work like at an ad agency, very much so like a creative brief, like what a creative director would do. And so, you know, using my drafting skills and all the things like that, you know, I knew I wanted to outsource immediately. I knew I wanted to do this as lean as possible. I went straight to Upwork, found an overseas industrial designer, basically someone who specializes in furniture and things like that. You know, I vetted a few people and kind of got it going that way. I can't remember the second part of your question. You said
the way that you got the product going, kind of your design background made it easy to get the samples. But I thought what was really cool is how once you got the samples, you took them around the neighborhood and pretty much just dropped them off at kids' houses and checked back in like a week later, right?
So yeah, what I did after I got this product designer and had a sample made, you know, it went overseas with the sample, you know, the product validation segment was not super difficult. You know, I live in St. Louis, Missouri. It's a pretty big city. And we live in this nice neighborhood in the city, you know, very pretty dense. And so I basically could walk around and take it to people's houses, for literally my friends' houses, be like, hey, can you play with this for a few days? Take some photos for me because I need something to like run an ad with. I need some user generated content. You know, your kids are cute. And so basically, you know, the first thing that was really unusual was like the kids would start calling it the fort. I was like, oh my gosh, that is bizarre. And then my own daughter would call it the fort, you know? And so then I kind of knew it hit when like the little boys that I was letting play with it specifically, who like love knocking things down, were like, where's my fort? You know, I would take the fort, you know, back home, which was kind of sad. And from these little kids, they'd be like, daddy, what happened to the fort, my fort? It was really interesting to see them like connect with a brand and then be like, it was a valuable thing that they kept playing with over and over. You know, I'd leave it there for a week and be like, did they use it longer than the first day? You know, and it was like, it was almost always like, yes, it was in constant rotation.
That's amazing. Yeah. I think the fort, I mean, I remember being a kid calling, you know, building, you know, blanket houses and pillow houses and all the stuff you're trying to save your living room from, but it's part of childhood, right? It's fun. But we call it the same thing. I think it's the universal word for building cool little nesties. Nesties or forts, one of the two. Very cool. So I think one of the most interesting things about, of course, a brilliant product, apart from that and the marketing, is just how you built the momentum that you did. How did you start that? I mean, maybe we can get into each one of these one by one, but how did you get into, you know, building the assets that you did, the email list, the SMS? Because you had, I'm guessing one of the reasons you had with Kickstarter is you were able to use that asset to launch your Kickstarter really well. How did you start that process of building up that audience and those lists? Like, where did it start?
Yeah. So, you know, the first thing when I learned about crowdfunding, you know, initially I wasn't exactly sure that crowdfunding was for me. It's gotten a lot of bad press and it's not quite as powerful culturally as it used to be. However, there was just something still romantic about it. I also knew that you could make a lot more mistakes. You know, crowdfunding is a great way to test out not only market validation, but really work out the kinks in your supply chain and things, because you do get this grace period of delivery, right? And so once I kind of settled on that, I learned almost immediately, like, the most important thing for crowdfunding is that pre-launch email list. It all comes down to that. You've got basically 24 hours that first day of your campaign to really hit it and to smash it out of the park. So then that the, you know, your ads all get better based off that. Your, you know, Kickstarter gives you organic, all of these things line up. So once I kind of learned about that, I went straight to kind of understanding what is called crowdfunding math, which I've heard a few people call it. And it's really simple. You know, if you're an e-commerce operator, you know, using Klaviyo email service providers, you're going to understand this perfectly. Like, what does an email list convert at, right? Something in e-commerce, I don't know, 3 or 4% is kind of what I came to understand. And so I looked at that 3 or 4% conversion rate. And I said, okay, what do I need to, how many emails do I need to gather in order to fully fund my campaign the first day? So I looked at that and I was like, okay, I think I need about 8,000 email addresses, which is what I was thinking at the time. And that meant I would like more than double or triple fund my email list. You know, 8,000 converting at 3 or 4% was like 200 or 2,500 or like purchasers, basically customers. You know, once I had that number, I was like, okay, so let's think here. So what does it normally take to cost to acquire an email lead? So that was about $1 to $2, you know? And so I was like, okay, so I need like $10,000, you know, which was a lot of money. And so that was kind of the infrastructure that I had built out to kind of understand where I needed to head initially. And after I kind of had that understanding that I need 8,000 email addresses to convert at 3 or 4% to hit this number that I want to hit the first day, and I needed about this much money to run in ads, I went straight to Facebook. I built a pretty broad audience based off of, you know, similar interests like Montessori toys, something like that, because I didn't have a Pixel, I didn't have anything to really build a custom audience off of yet. So I had that, I built that ad out, and then I built out what is this SaaS company called Kickoff Labs, which uses a viral growth and sharing campaign. And I built out a custom landing page with my product on it, with my value props on it. And people would sign up with their email address. By joining our email list, they would get, you know, a huge discount, a 45 or 50% discount. And after they kind of like locked in that discount, quote unquote, by signing up on this Kickoff Labs landing page, I would invite them to share a special link that was generated by Kickoff Labs. And that special link would basically, it would give them access to this leaderboard where they could see and potentially win a free product. The top 5 sharers in this campaign would win a free product. And so that was kind of my like top of the funnel. Like that was like the strategy that I entered into when I joined the crowdfunding kind of sphere, basically.
So let me learn. So you got some, you're running Facebook ads, you pick some audiences that are somewhat related. You're running ads with creative, maybe some of the videos or pictures that you took with the testing of all the children that you traumatized by taking away their fort at the end of the week. You got your landing page. Kickoff Labs, I wasn't familiar with this before you mentioned it and doing research. Are they, obviously they help a landing page builder. Is it kind of a landing page builder combined with almost like a contest viral sharing tool? Is that kind of the, how would you describe it in one sentence for people who haven't heard of it before?
That's exactly. It's landing page builder with a contest component that makes it really easy to build viral growth based off of sharing.
Great. And so the viral growth isn't on Facebook's engines per se, but once people opt into your landing page, then they can have a link with a leaderboard and an incentive. And so you're really building a contest off of Facebook. Is that fair? Or are you doing it somehow within the Facebook ecosystem?
Yeah. So it's completely built. The Kickoff Labs ecosystem is actually like fully self-contained, which is really nice because you can go to whatever channel is the most popular for your customers. And so for us, that was Facebook groups specifically for early growth. And so, you know, a customer would sign up with their email, you know, or they would see our ad, or they would see, most likely, they would see someone else sharing our campaign because most of our growth was viral. They would go and sign up with their first name and their email address, and then they would get their own private share link. And we would try to encourage them to share that link in order to basically potentially win a free product. And, you know, the great thing about that link is it can be shared via text message, it can be shared via email, it can be shared via Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. But most of the customers we found really found us through Facebook and Facebook private groups specifically. So they would, we would have people sign up maybe based on an ad, and they would get that share link. They would like email me and be like, hey, I love this thing. Like, can you send me more photos? Blah, blah, blah. I want to share it in this Facebook group. And I would be like, yes, please. That would be awesome. And so they would share it in like a 50,000 person Facebook group, right? Their share link. And all of a sudden they're racking up shares on this Kickoff Labs like contest engine. And, you know, I'm getting email leads for basically free, you know.
So I guess two things. One, I always think they can work, but I'm never the type of person to share, you know, to like, if I have a link to share it for points or credits or discounts or things like that. But I guess point number one is people definitely will if it's the right product and the right people. Second thing was you had a quote, and I might maybe miss, this may be out of context for what you're talking about, but you had said in one of your interviews, education is the reason we raised over $2 million in under 10 hours. Specifically, I think not education of the product per se, but I think you were talking about like educating, you know, your email list, the people who signed up on your list on how to share. Like you had to, is it fair that you had to, it was really important and you learned it was really important to walk them through the process of how to share this link? Is that what you were referring to in that?
Yeah. So most of that is kind of in regards to the education component was big because we had a mostly new audience to Kickstarter, mostly new to a lot of these technical things. So the education was kind of, it was all encompassing almost. But yeah, I mean, we would definitely encourage sharing. And I should caveat this like viral campaign. This does not work for every brand. It works specifically really well for us, you know, kind of the mommy blog world, mom Facebook group world. And not only that, but we were and are in a really exploding category called like kids play furniture that has been dominated by this, or basically pioneered by this really cool company called Nugget or Nugget Comfort Couch. They created a really cool play couch that became basically like Supreme or Air Jordans for moms. And specifically on Facebook. And so, you know, all of our growth kind of came from that. You know, I think if you're selling Rolexes or, you know, $500 ink pens, you're not going to do like a viral sharing campaign, right? Those are not the types of customers that you're going to need. But for us specifically, you know, a lot of these moms were really used to doing sharing campaigns, especially on Facebook and Instagram. And so, you know, once we kind of got them into our ecosystem through that viral sharing, which is why we didn't have so much ad spend or why we were under, you know, $3,000 ad spend for 80,000 leads, is that eventually we got them to the education portion because there was a ton of education to do specifically with how to share or how to be involved in giveaways, how to be involved in Kickstarter, about the product specifically, about product specifications and colors and all those things like that.
Got it. So you mentioned the Nugget, super cool product. For those who don't know it, it's kind of like a folding bed that has some triangle pillows that it's, you know, you can sleep on it, you can play on it. We actually have one, our kids use it a bunch, and it's like, it's yeah, kind of like a couch that, you know, I think I remember when the original Kickstarter went out for it, they're actually also an ECF member as well. And I think they kind of envisioned it very similar to, you know, like adults in dorm room, and you know, and I don't think they were targeting originally towards the kid market as much. Sure, it was one of the ones they were thinking about, but it seems like that's what it really exploded with. So talk a little bit about, because I think you also, obviously it resonated with that group and there was a lot of those existing groups already that kind of this was a perfect play for. But did you dive into that market ahead of time? Like, talk about some of the market research you did in terms of what people liked and didn't like about the fort and getting into some of those Facebook groups. Because I know that you did a lot of homework on what, you know, people were liking about the existing products in the space and how you could maybe improve or even iterate on them.
Yeah, I basically saw the growth of the Nugget, you know, having young kids, having friends who had them. I was definitely a fan because I've been a huge fan of a lot of D2C companies or e-commerce companies for a while. So it was kind of one that I was tracking. And once kind of COVID hit and the explosion started, I basically just kind of caught on that this Facebook Nugget groups were just blowing up. And I mean, crazy engagement and really intense. I mean, just really intense people, you know, people marking them up for 2-3x on, you know, resellers and all sorts of crazy stuff. People lining up online to get Nuggets. And definitely that's where that kind of opportunity came from to build something in the play furniture category. And what I did was, you know, is I just inserted myself into those communities quietly. I think a mistake that a lot of entrepreneurs make is when they're really young and eager is they go in way too loud into these groups. And you just, honestly, people just don't care about you, right? They're not there for your product or whatever you're selling at that moment. You have to build your own audience for that. So I listened really closely. I will say it. I love the Nugget. I think it's an amazing company. It's, you know, they're doing crazy numbers. You know, something I could only aspire to be. But there were certainly things that I thought I could add. Right. I noticed that a lot of people wanted to build things specifically. So I basically took the idea of like a building block. You know, Nugget started with a couch and made a couch that's closer to play. I went on the other direction. I said I'm going to take like a building block and make it a little bigger and make it something that could potentially be furniture, but is mostly for building. So I kind of took the opposite direction because I saw what the Nugget customers were saying. They were like, I saw that they really were focused on playing. The kids wanted to build things. The kids needed to be able to move the cushions themselves. And a big thing, obviously, is like the kids wanted to hold up their creations a little bit better. So the magnet element came in and that gave us a lot of novelty that really captured the market, as well as, you know, the couch cushion thing. I mean, you know, if you didn't have a Nugget and everyone wanted one, we were an alternative that seemed to fit into that really well for the parents who were just now discovering it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at their Nugget site right now, and you have to go through before you can even add something to the cart. You have to check a box that says, I've read and understand the backorders FAQ. And it looks like stuff isn't shipping till April, you know, 2 months out, which is, you know, crazy.
Which is fast for them right now, as far as I know. I mean, like, yeah, they've been on back orders for a long time. It's amazing the demand for that product.
That's really interesting. So you got in there. So you talked through the email list. You built up this email list with Facebook ads. Like, did you have any previous experience with Facebook ads at all?
I had a little bit of experience. I had run some ads before. I had just kind of played around in Ads Manager. However, you know, I knew very little. I'm almost completely self-taught. So, you know, I had kind of the small understanding of like how to build an audience and at least how to put, you know, I knew much more about the creative aspect, you know, the types of images and video to use. So it's very limited.
Got it. So really it sounds like Facebook ads got the ball rolling, but really the growth, the majority of that 80,000 on the email list came from people sharing it in those bigger Facebook groups that were an insanely good fit. Is that fair to say?
That's almost exactly right. You know, almost all the growth came from, hey, I saw your ad, you know, can you send me more photos or more info? And then that person posts that exclusive stuff in another group, you know, a group for kids with sensory processing disorders, or a group for kids who love like wooden toys, which there isn't any crossover there, but, you know, just any toy group, right? And so that was totally how the growth happened, based in these private Facebook groups.
Got it. And you ended up creating, using that list to also be able to build up your own private Facebook group. I feel like private Facebook groups are something that are becoming a lot more popular. We've got a couple threads actually in the forums this week that are kicking off about that, and not kicking off, just people, store owners who drive a meaningful amount of the revenue from Facebook groups. How did you end up converting 20% of your email list into a private Facebook group? That seems like a crazy high opt-in rate to be able to get. I guess, is it? Yeah. Well, I mean, how do you do that?
The first email they sent out after they signed up for our email list was basically like, we've locked in your discount. We will send you the email when it is available, when we're launching. And the second line was, you should jump into our Facebook group. You can ask the founders questions. You can see exclusive photos. And really, specifically, a lot of these moms really, and I keep saying moms because really, I mean, that is our, I'm not trying to discriminate against dads, but generally that is our customer. They would be really interested and have a ton of questions. And I saw these Nugget Facebook groups and that Nugget didn't own their own Facebook group, which now that I've seen explosive growth, I actually completely understand why. I'm on the other side of the table. But back in the day when my group was under 1,000 people, you know, it was way easier to give a lot of people personal attention, really building that, like that article by Kevin Kelly, if you've read it, about the 1,000 true fans. You know, I was really building those 1,000 true fans by being in there every day, interacting with people, answering their questions, giving them really good customer service, and really trying to convert people to love the product that they had no idea what it was. You know, it was completely new and novel. There was nothing else like it at the time.
And so you got a Facebook group. How has that been? Like, how important, I guess, talk about the experience of a Facebook group. I think the pros and the cons. I think it's really, a lot of times people talk about community. Like community is, I feel like it's, we're going to hear a lot more about that. I think it's getting more important and rightfully so. But I also think there's a little bit of like a look at that from the outside with rose tinted glasses. And like, they're like, oh, a community of fans who loves you all the time. And they just sell your stuff for you. And like, it's just like this, it's all good. It's all happy. The real world of community, we are very, very thankful to have a very low maintenance community in terms of the quality of the people in e-commerce fuel and like just the types of people we have. And we do this process through the vetting process, but like we have amazing members, like is the best that I could hope for. And even still, you know, it can be a real challenge and a psychological challenge at times trying to moderate well. There's a lot of challenges there that I think if people haven't run communities or moderated communities before, they're not even on their radar. So I'd love to hear from your thoughts on like what's been good from you, like what have been the benefits of having a community and what have been some of the, you know, the challenges that you didn't really fully understand or anticipate before having one?
Yeah. You know, ECF has been a breath of fresh air, and it was one of the things when I first learned about, you know, you specifically and ECF, I was just like, oh, this is what I want to be. I want to be a 7 or 8 figure seller. And so, you know, it's such an interesting thing to contrast it against the community that I am currently running. Early on, our community was very diehard fans of this kids play couch category, and they had a lot of thoughts. I was able to give them a lot of personal attention. That ultimately became really emotionally draining. It could have ruined me if I didn't kind of learn to offload it quickly. We experienced explosive growth at one point, you know, going a few times we had overnight of thousands and thousands of email leads. And you know, a percentage of those converted to the Facebook group. And so at a certain point, you know, we hit this limit where I could not handle it. The benefit was that I was able to get out information really quickly. I was able to get feedback super quickly. I mean, the feedback is crazy fast. People are going to tell you exactly what they think. There's a lot of people who love everything you do and are big fans and just are excited. But there's always this 10%, and it may even be less than 10. You know, I call it a lot like the vocal minority, which you've heard a lot, you know, in e-commerce and online stuff. And that has been the real challenge and detriment to having a private community on Facebook specifically. You know, with an off Facebook community, you get the benefit of being able to kind of dictate more how people see things. With a Facebook group, Facebook dictates how you see things. So, for example, if there's a post, the post itself has a lot of good information. You post it as an announcement. Most of the times, people aren't going directly into your Facebook group to see it. They're just seeing it on their group's feed, and they're seeing the most recent comment, or the most engaged with comment, which oftentimes is a naysayer or some sort of dissension or something like that. And, you know, looking at a group of about 14,000, 15,000 people right now, it is almost impossible to keep up with. I ended up hiring my best friend, you know, like best man at his wedding, friends from college. He worked at Apple, which was basically the best thing I could have ever done because, you know, working in an Apple store for years as he did, you basically learn how to kind of touch the people. You know, there is like this ability you learn to navigate how to deal with difficult people, especially in person. And so he taught me really how to listen to people, how to deal with challenging situations. And ultimately, he took over that group, which has now become somewhat of an emotional drain on him. So we're actually actively looking to see how we can create a healthier group. I hate to say like political climate, but that factors in. The customer we're dealing with not only has high purchase intent, which is really valuable in e-commerce, you know, high purchase intent with a high price point, but they also have a lot of questions. They also know or perceive to know a lot, right? They do a lot of research and they have a lot of, if you don't have the answer that another company has to a certain thing like foam density or certain like safety requirements or for fabrics and foams and things, you know, you're getting into really delicate conversations with people who, it's hard to say, but like they claim to know as much or more than you or your factories, and it can get really delicate and really tricky quickly. And so we've really had to navigate that cautiously. We've certainly failed, absolutely, and we will continue to fail, but we are, you know, really struggling with kind of the emotional balance of like, hey, there are some amazing people in here who just want to have fun, who want to talk about forts and kids stuff and have legitimate questions. And then there are people who who really actively are seeking out our destruction or something like that, the biggest tax is emotionally. It gets really hard to deal with that. So there are major ups and major downs, and we're actively looking for a way to kind of create a happier and healthier group.
Hey, it's Andrew here with a quick aside. And you obviously love e-commerce. You're interested in that. And so I wanted to make sure you're aware of the private community we have at E-Commerce Fuel for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brand owners. And it's something we've been building for close to a decade now with over 1,100 members across the globe. And our secret sauce, like the name implies, is that everyone inside has deep experience doing this with an owner mindset. And so what does that mean? It means you get, when you log into our form, you get fast, on-point answers to your most pressing questions, regardless of whether that's you're negotiating a new lease for a warehouse, or maybe you're negotiating with UPS or USPS or FedEx about shipping rates or pickup times, or potentially you're just looking to find a great outsourcer, or wondering if you can even outsource your content. Is that something anyone has had success with? You can tap into this huge knowledge and brain trust across the globe and get answers within hours, sometimes even minutes. So it's an incredibly active forum with experienced people. You get to plug into an amazing network worldwide. A lot of our members, when they travel, if they touch down in Dallas or Sydney or London or Bozeman, Montana or whatever it is, oftentimes they'll reach out to other ECF members, you know, obviously a little harder to do potentially right now, but and see if, you know, they want to get together for a beer to connect and just, and oftentimes get to know a new friend. So it's an amazing network, as well as invites to our member only events like ECF Live, which is our annual summit gathering for about 200 people. And then finally, the intelligence in our community just that's shared helps you avoid making really costly hiring and software mistakes. So our members write reviews on what they're using, their software tools, their agencies, completely unbiased, completely from their own experience. And so you can avoid making that, you know, hiring that agency that's an absolute nightmare, but you don't know about it. Or you can hone in on the one that actually does a really good job. It saves you a ton of time and money from bad hiring and software decisions. So if any of this sounds interesting, head on over to ecommercefuel.com and you can learn more about the community, what's included, and apply for membership as well. All right, let's go ahead and jump back in to the discussion. Yeah, I feel like community, you have to walk this, to moderate a community well, you have to walk this really fine balance of being, of listening to everyone, of most people's concerns. You've got kind of a whole spectrum, right? Like you've got people that have reasonable concerns. You've got people that kind of have crazy concerns. And then you have people that are just causing problems and creating havoc. And you have to be able to walk this. You have to be able to put on multiple hats of being able to listen to people's concerns genuinely and think about them with kindness and empathy. But also when people are just being crazy, to be able to just, you know, throw them out. Like free speech, a lot of people will bring up the free speech argument. And I think it's interesting because free speech means, you know, at least in the United States, protected under the Constitution. It's like protection from the government from coming in and prosecuting you or tossing you in jail because you say something they don't agree with. Free speech does not mean you get to be a douchebag in a Facebook group and expect to stick around for the long term, or any group for that matter, right? Like, so it's, yeah, I think you got to walk that line. Definitely an emotional, you know, experience. What about the good parts though? Because there's a ton, I mean, community is so powerful. It's so hard to steal or replicate. And talk about the good parts of having a Facebook group and what's that's done for the brand and the launch.
Yeah, sorry, I kind of went with the bad parts. You know, it's what I'm dwelling on right now. You know, as we're making some strong changes that I truly believe are for the best interest of the customer. But at the same time, they're like, you cheated me. You know, this is, you're trying to, you know, those types. So I've got that rolling in my head. So I'm a little bit.
Wait a minute. This only has 10 magnets? You promised me 12 magnets, Connor. What are you doing here? Are you just trying to rip us all off?
It's just like, if you only knew how hard I'm trying not to rip you off. Oh, man. So it's, some of that is just funny. You've worked in e-commerce long enough to have heard it all. So this is a lot of new to me. I mean, the benefit really is that you do get, in a funny way, you almost get a reverse mob mentality, which I've heard mentioned a few times, which is like your diehard fans actually go to your defense, which is really fun, which is enjoyable in a challenging group. But the true benefit of these communities is like, if I can really if these people can trust me and trust that I'm really trying to make them the best product and get them the best deal, and like, you know, I'm unapologetic about like, this company needs to profit in order for you to get the best product and in order for me to take care of you the best. Like, I'm really straightforward about that. You know, if you can believe that I'm putting this money to the best use, if you can believe that I'm really, really, truly trying to make a safe and fun product for your kids, like, this is going to be amazing. Like, you're going to love this. And so, you know, as I built that trust in those communities with those people, you know, by doing live videos, by doing, you know, I'll jump into the Facebook group and I'll answer a question by shooting like a selfie video on my phone, right? And it always makes people feel better. And, you know, another thing we do a lot is like, hey, just email me. You know, a lot of these people just want to be heard, especially in regards to the bad things. And, you know, almost always myself or Ian, my friend who I work with, you know, we can turn them around, you know, just by giving personal attention and really helping them talk through their fears. It's funny, but these groups become therapy in a very odd and probably unhealthy way ultimately. But, you know, I wish the algorithm of Facebook was a little bit different so we could manage what people are seeing first. I mean, the real beauty of it is you're really creating people who will go to the mat for you. Also, you're creating people who like will purchase because they believe in you and your story, right? I mean, my story is true. I'm very privileged in a lot of ways in my life, but I actually did lose my job. I actually did sell my car. I actually did use my car, selling my car and my severance to like build this company. Like, those are all real. And people know that and they're willing to support me because of that. And while we have had downs and, you know, the number has kept going up on Kickstarter, you know, we haven't made so many people mad that they've canceled all their pledges, right? And that's really powerful that people are still willing to kind of be with me on this. And I'm going to do my best to take care of them for that. And so I think that is the beauty of that. If we can figure out a better way to kind of work with the algorithm on Facebook and how people really see the content that we're putting out in the group or some sort of new moderation system, I think it's such a powerful way for people to kind of interact with you and what you're building and what you believe in. And we've seen the benefit, you know, I wouldn't have raised the millions of dollars in you know, literal hours if I didn't foster that group and that email list by proxy, right? Because the group was only a fraction of the email list.
Yeah. Would you, if you had to start over again from scratch, would you try to do it on your own independent platform or forum or kind of, you know, third party platform, some kind of discussion board or forum or something like that? Because just, you've got more control over moderation. You've got a lot more controls and ability to moderate well with some of the tools that they give you. You also don't have to, you know, kind of what you're talking about with correct me if I'm wrong, but I would guess seeing the way that Facebook has surfaced some of the more divisive comments and controversial comments has maybe made you think about like, what, I don't know, is this social media a good thing for our society? Maybe not. But I mean, all of that being said, would you, doing it from scratch, and if somebody right now is thinking about launching a community, would you go back and do it on your own platform as opposed to on Facebook?
I've given this a lot of thought and I'm continuing to think about it. It's an ongoing conversation with myself and my kind of coworker. I don't think we would have had the growth we had unless we were where the people were. These moms mostly are on Facebook groups. I mean, that is where they are. And I can't see how we could have gotten them anywhere else. And so we went to where they were. And, you know, initially I said a little bit earlier that Nugget had their own group, had a group that was started by fans, and they did not control that group. So when I was starting out this company, I said, I have to own my own channel. You know, I heard all the e-commerce people preaching, you know, own your own channel, own your email list, own your SMS, you know, all these things. And I said, okay, I'm going to own my Facebook group. And I went into it and I realized, you know, I had about 10,000 people in the group, like why Nugget didn't start that. There's a lot of misinformation. It's hard to get your own information out. And so I think it would be really hard for us to move people to a new platform. We are actively thinking about that. I think it's a really interesting strategy, but at the same time, you know, there may be just really a long-term benefit in riding it out and just sticking it out, you know, because we're at this point looking at three options, you know, keep it like it is, kind of feed it to the wolves, right? Let it go to group moderation and kind of drop our company tag off of it and just let it be about the product, but not owned by the company, or move it off of the platform.
Interesting. Yeah. It seems like it's almost like Amazon, it's harder. Have you thought about, it seems like, I wonder if the best balance is use Facebook as the initial catalyst to get people, to build the momentum, to build the interest, to get, because I'm sure in your group too, like in any group, you've got that group, you know, that top 5-10% of people who are most active, that are, you know, creating a lot of the content, helping people. So, you know, have you thought about taking the group, the core members that are really great and healthy and a good part of your culture, and then moving them off to something? Because it's almost like then you could leverage the growth of Facebook to get established and build it, and then move it over to your own platform where moderation and ownership would be easier.
Yeah, we thought about that, and you know, some sort of like, hey, were you a backer or a purchaser, or you know, would you be willing to pay $1 to join? You know, some sort of like barrier to entry that hopefully a naysayer would kind of piss them off in a nice way to keep them out. You know, I think it, but it's funny, as I've kind of read the comments and seen who's in this Facebook group, you know, our top poster, who is, I'm probably a naysayer. She is a naysayer, and she's got double the comments of anyone else. And she was our third backer and has not canceled her pledge. So just put that in perspective.
How does that work? Like, why would you?
I don't know.
what drives someone to come onto Facebook, join a group about a kid's toys, and unless they think it's like a carcinogenic, you know, thing that is going to, you know, really harm children, like why? And that's their personal mission to protect. Like, why would you come in and just berate someone's idea and product? Like, where's the, from a psychological perspective?
You got to talk to, you really should talk to Ian, my coworker here. He's brilliant with human psychology and has a lot of thoughts on this. It is baffling. You know, we retain a lot of these customers who seem to always be mad at us. And it is a real challenge, you know, and like I said, the toll is emotional, you know, it really wears on you. And it's, you know, we can turn them around if we get them one-on-one for the most part. It's a crazy world. I don't know what else to say.
I think the irony of building community is that to be able to build community well, you need to be empathetic and understand people and take their concerns to heart. And that helps you shape a community. And like you said, help people be heard. Not that you have to implement every single idea someone brings you or act on every single concern, because you have to be the filter and do what you can, you know, think is best from your position that other people don't have. But the downside is that if you can do that well, you also take everything, all the criticism, all the problems, all the drama to heart. And it's like you said, especially for Ian at the moment, like it's hard. It becomes wearing, and the irony of building healthy communities, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I don't think, like I said earlier, I don't think the Facebook algorithm is conducive to building a healthy community. I really do think this is partially kind of makes me worry a little bit about the future. Certainly, like you mentioned earlier, I worry about our future children of people. I worry about what Facebook is doing. You know, it really is trying to show you what you don't want it to see, which is why something like Discourse, which I think ECF is built on, is really interesting, and I think does foster healthier people. Of course, will get mad and fight or bicker over something, and you know, and we're certainly heightened in politics and everything like that. It is how Facebook is built. It is as Ian calls it, the Zuckerborg is programming these people. So. Yeah, it's very interesting.
For anyone listening who is thinking about an independent platform, we use, like you mentioned, Connor, a form software called Discourse. Discourse.com, I think is where you can find it. And it's phenomenal. If you're looking to build your own, the UX is a little vanilla. It's not super sexy from a UX perspective, but from a functionality perspective, if your primary goal is to have a platform that you own that facilitates great discussion and has a lot of great built-in moderation tools and organization tools, it's second to none, in my opinion. So worth checking out if you're listening, thinking about building a platform and a community on something you own. One last thing, one or two more things I want to talk to you about here before we wrap up. SMS, you've built a really meaningful SMS list. And I'm guessing you probably built that just through the same process. You got people in your community, probably as a result of the email list. People opted in on email. What did that look like? Did you just the same kind of thing? Like when people, how did you collect the SMS and the phone numbers? Like where did that, how did you do that? And how did you do it in a way where you got such a high level of opt-in for people?
It was interesting. We actually were approached about SMS by our customers before we really even committed to it. You know, they had said like, hey, I don't want to miss this. Can you text me? I don't check my email. And so I know, right? So if you're thinking, you know, everything I know about everything I've learned about e-commerce basically gets thrown out of the window with my customers because they're so unique in this kind of area. And so they, if you think about it though, like millennial mothers, some of them maybe work part-time, stay at home. Email is not a day-to-day part of their lives. Like, you know, Slack, email, all these other things that we do, you know, sitting at a computer all day. If they're, especially if they're staying home with their kids, you know, you get why they would want the fort to help them distract them. And at the same time, their phone is their lifeline to the outside world, you know, phone, Facebook, but email just isn't the thing that they're opening. That's what they're using for other sort of things. And, you know, maybe like newsletters and coupons and, you know, the Banana Republic like newsletter that my wife gets for discounts. And so, and not to overgeneralize, but that's, you know, they basically told us like, hey, we want to make sure we can get this. We want the information. In fact, they would even say like, can you text us when you email us? Because I want to read your email, but I'm not going to check. So text us, which is crazy, right? I'm getting people who not only want my text messages, but want to read my emails and are mad when they didn't get it. Like it's broken all of the rules. It's totally insane. And I mean, all we had to do to get them to opt in was, you know, post in the Facebook group, you know, just kind of build it up a little bit. We basically pushed out, you know, regular, like put a button in Klaviyo and said, you know, in most of our emails that dealt with education or something like, hey, you don't want to miss this, like jump on our text message list so we can update you immediately.
That's cool. And you're using PostScript, right, to manage all your SMS?
Yeah, PostScript. And honestly, it's been great. I rode the 30-day free trial for all it was worth. I've got 8,800 people on my list right now. I actually haven't sent an email with a paid account yet. So thank you, PostScript. Shout out. So you can go a long way with a PostScript account. So if you're about to launch something and you don't have cash, just time that 30-day trial. But yeah, they've been great. The platform's really simple to use. You're able to respond to text messages via email, which is like so nice. You know, we get a lot of people responding. And so basically what we would end up doing is we would put a blog post on our Shopify that was basically our email with all the updates or all the education, like here's how to add on to an add-on on Kickstarter. And we would text them like, hey, check this out, add-on on Kickstarter. And we would text them like a shortened link. PostScript will shorten your link for you. And they would go to that blog post or check their email after getting that text message. And it worked out perfectly.
Very cool. It sounds like it's the perfect audience for. I mean, when you have the number of e-commerce store owners that are just saying, are you kidding me? This guy's customers are asking him to be able to, you know, accept their phone numbers to send them. I mean, oh man.
This can't last forever, Andrew. It can't last forever.
Well, it sounds good for now, although you've obviously put in an insane amount of work in your team as well. So, well, we got to start wrapping up here, but Connor, congrats on, I mean, you've obviously, we're super savvy with the way you researched this and built it and tested it and marketed it and launched it. It's a super cool product. I think the Kickstarter is going to have wrapped up by the time this airs. It's wrapping up. We're recording on a Wednesday. I think it wraps up this Friday. But you can still learn about how to pick one up at getthefort.com. We'll also link up to the Kickstarter if you want to go watch Connor's brilliant case study in how to, you know, how to sell the benefits versus the actual product. Yeah. So congrats on all the success. Getthefort.com to check it out. And we'll kind of, again, run a little long, but would love to do an abbreviated lightning round with you if you're up for it to kind of put a bow on this.
Yeah. I've got some buffer time. If you do want to learn more about my actual strategy, I have shared almost all of this on my Twitter. And so please, if you're in e-commerce, go steal my strategy. It's free. I've shared almost all of it. And you can steal it from me at Connor B. Lewis, C-O-N-O-R is how you spell Connor. So I just thought that may be relevant to put out there.
Perfect. No, thank you. And I definitely was reading on some of that as I was prepping for this. So we'll link up to your Twitter as well in the show notes. First question for you, what's your favorite piece of e-commerce tech?
Man, it's got to be Klaviyo because it's so over my head and seems so impressive that I can't even wrap my mind around it yet. I'm so excited to make money from email, you know, even though I have. It's such a cool thing.
Oh, you're in a great position to do it too. Least favorite piece of e-commerce tech?
Oh, Kickstarter is not really e-commerce tech, but it is a terrible platform. Sorry, it's bad. It's outdated. There's no tracking. It's not built for creators. I don't know who it's for, actually. I've been wondering. I'm trying to look around to find out who actually is it for.
Nice. Does not bode well for the future Kickstarter IPO, or if there is one. I have no idea if they're actually planning on that. What's one of your fondest memories from childhood?
Oh, that's a great question. I should have thought about this one more. That I do not even think I know. I grew up going to a boys camp in the South on this mountain called Lookout Mountain in Alabama. I think my favorite memories were doing like campouts and like the counselors scaring us with like gorilla masks on. you know, just like little boy stuff, running around, getting covered in mud, stripping all your clothes off. Just that's the best.
Nice. What was a major seminal moment or period in your life looking back?
I went through a huge personal transition. I've always been, I was dealing with a lot of mental health issues and substance issues. And it was before I had my first daughter. I was lucky enough to kind of be in a position to take off time work and spend time with my wife as she was pregnant with our first daughter, and like got to road trip and all these things, you know, I love, which we should talk about sometime, overlanding, mountain biking, all these things. And so I had this transitional period in about 2018, you know, cleaned up my life and my marriage and had a daughter and clear-headedly had a child. It was a very beautiful time in life.
That's really cool. What was it that served as the catalyst for that whole kind of transformational period? Was it just having the space to take time off? Was it like a conversation you had with someone? What was it that sparked that amazing period?
Yeah, so this is a totally other podcast, and I'll just do the 30-second version. But I rode my bike across America and shot a documentary. So like I said, other podcast. I had a meltdown at film festivals, taking this film that I made to film festivals, and my wife was pregnant, and you know, I realized I just couldn't continue living the way I was. I was not present in my marriage and my life, and I had a little baby girl on the way. And so, you know, kind of took the point to reflect, got to take time off work, and you know, rebuilt my marriage and my relationship, and you know, like moved into a new house, and it was very, very interesting, like beautiful and challenging time.
That's really cool. Where can people, and as well as myself, watch this documentary?
Yeah. I'll try and send you a copy. It's, you know, looking back, it's actually not a bad film. You know, of course I'm like, oh, I could do better. So yeah, it still resides. At least you can see it. If you want to see it, just tweet at me and I'll send you a copy. But you can look up kind of the info about it called asbestos.movie. My grandma died of mesothelioma, which is a rare lung cancer caused by asbestos exposure. And so my cousin and I rode our bikes across America, kind of researching and uncovering all of like this corporate cover-up stuff related to the asbestos industry in the U.S. and how it really poisoned like thousands and thousands of U.S. workers.
Sounds super interesting. We'll link up to that link and yeah, I'll definitely be tweeting at you about that. One last question, because I'm a little bit of a bike geek and I thought about taking a similar trip. When you got done, how long did it take you? A month or two?
It took almost 3 months. We were shooting a movie during the time, but yeah, so average mileage of 85 miles a day, rode from Astoria, Oregon to New York City.
When you got done, were you done with the trip, like absolutely ready? I don't want to see a bike again as long as I live. Or were you just thinking, this is amazing, I love being free out here on this bike, it's such a simple, streamlined life, I wish I could be out here for another 3 months?
I was ready to be done. I was not ready to be done with bikes. I was ready to be done with semi trucks buzzing by me on country roads in Wyoming with a 25 mile an hour headwind. The amount of times I almost died was way more than I like. And I immediately was like, I'm going to do mountain biking for the rest of my life. I'm done road racing. I'm done with cars. So that, you know, there's like a low level of trauma that you get from getting buzzed by cars for months. And I do not recommend riding on the road across America. I think it's, as a parent now, I'm like, I would never do that again. So dangerous. But yeah, it was incredible. You know, if I was ever to do an intense endurance thing like that, it would definitely be off-road. So yeah, but I got on the trainer to ride at home while I was editing the movie, you know, within a few weeks. I took like a few weeks off, but you know, I just love bikes. So it's hard to stay away. If you're a cyclist, you know what it's like. You want to spend all your time and money doing it.
Yeah, it can be addicting. There's that, we're losing all the non-bikers here, but we're at the end of the interview anyway, so I'm gonna indulge. There's that Trans-American Trail. Have you heard of this? It's a off-pavement, mostly dirt trail all the way from the east to the west coast, which sounds like, I mean, I agree with you, because biking on the roads, usually if I hear, you know, just this week I was out on a ride where I was on a pretty busy road, and every car that's coming by, I usually like, this sounds really morbid, but I always take like a deep breath and exhale so that I'm relaxed. So if I get sideswiped, my body has a better chance of like, it sounds horrible, but like you think about this kind of stuff. But anyway, Trans-American Trail would be a cool one potentially to do off-road.
Yeah. And in the Rockies too, I think there's you can go from north to south or something. Yeah. I'm really into that. Obviously gravel and mountain biking have become super popular because of the danger.
Have you seen Tour Divide, the trail that goes from Banff down to Mexico that these like superhuman people do? And there's a race every year. And it, I mean, people do it in like 13 days. It's crazy. Oh, yeah.
I like sleeping. Wait, just straight up. I want to buy really expensive, cushy bikes. And I only started a company to buy bikes. I'll be completely honest. This is not about money. I just want expensive mountain bikes I can't afford. Because if you know mountain bikes, you know, like, hey, there's nothing wrong with a $10,000 mountain bike.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's funny. I think you mentioned this in the ECF thread about mountain bikes. Now we've lost everyone except for the bikers. But you mentioned getting a mega tower, right? For, you know, and it's funny because when I sold my CB radio business as like a splurge to celebrate, this was a while back, but I bought the almost exact same bike, the Santa Cruz High Tower. And so when you wrote that, I was like, I know exactly the mind space.
It's, you know, I think most people getting into e-com or something like that, we all have our hobbies. And my goal was like, not only am I going to make $20,000 for daycare, but I'm going to make an extra $10,000 to buy all the bike crap that I've been dying for. I'm going to buy my dream, like destroyer, like mountain bike. And I'm going to get like, finally get the Wahoo kicker trainer for inside. And I mean, yeah, so I am hopefully, I think we have just enough profit margin where I can give myself $10,000 owner distribution to buy a mountain bike. So look for me online with my photos of my bike.
I love it. Well, Connor, thank you so much. It was a lot of fun. Thank you for, if you weren't a bike enthusiast, sticking around for the last 5 minutes of us just kind of drooling over bikes more or less. Yeah, again, getthefort.com, check it out. Connor, congratulations, and really appreciate having you in the community. It's been great to have you as a member.
Thanks, Andrew. Really looking forward to being a part of it in the future and excited about this company.
Thanks so much for listening. And the fact that you made it to the end of the episode tells me you're probably somewhat interested in this stuff and might be a really good fit for the e-commerce fuel community. Our community is the world's largest group of 7- and 8-figure e-commerce store owners and offers a value-packed form, dynamic live events, and much more. If that sounds interesting at all, you should learn about membership and how to apply at ecommercefuel.com. Big thank you to our two sponsors. Supercharge your email marketing efforts with Klaviyo, the world's best email and SMS marketing engine at klaviyo.com/ECF. And also one-click upsell from Zipify Apps, where you can rapidly increase your average order value by offering powerful targeted upsells. You can get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Finally, thanks to Sherelle Torricampo for helping produce the show. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network live from New York.